This is Audible.
Acquisition.com Publishing is proud to present Acquisition.com Volume 1, $100 Million Offers, How to Make Offers So Good People Feel Stupid Saying No, written and performed by Alex Ramosi. Guiding Principles. There are no rules. Dedication. To Layla. You are my ride or die, a term used to describe a person, usually a woman, that is willing to do anything for their partner, friend, or family, even in the face of danger. Couldn't do this without you and wouldn't want to. You make waking up every day worth it. Thank you for being unapologetically you. You're a down motherfucker. To Trevor. You're the best friend a guy could ask for. Thank you for spending hours upon hours beating up the ideas that became this book with me. It would not have been half as good as it is without your relentless drive for simplification and clarity. Eternally grateful for our friendship. You make me feel less alone in this world. Cheers to becoming old and crotchety. Start here. Outsized returns often come from betting against conventional wisdom, and conventional wisdom is usually right. Given a 10% chance of 100 times payoff, you should take that bet every time. But you're still going to be wrong 9 times out of 10. We all know that if you swing for the fences, you're going to strike out a lot, but you're also going to hit some home runs. The difference between baseball and business, however, is that baseball has a truncated outcome distribution. When you swing, no matter how well you connect with the ball, the most runs you can get is 4. In business, every once in a while, when you step up to the plate, you can score 1,000 runs. This long-tail distribution of returns is why it's important to be bold. Big winners pay for so many experiments. Jeff Bezos. As entrepreneurs, we make bets every day. We are gamblers, gambling our hard-earned money on labor, inventory, rent, marketing, etc., all with the hopes of a higher payout. Oftentimes, we lose, but sometimes, we win and win big. However, there's a difference between gambling in business and gambling in a casino. In a casino, the odds are stacked against you. With skill, you can improve them, but never beat them. In contrast, in business, you can improve your skills to shift the odds in your favor. Simply stated, with enough skill, you can become the house. After beginning a series of books on acquisition, it became apparent that I could not talk about any other topic without first addressing the offer, the starting point of any conversation to initiate a transaction with a customer, what you are literally providing them in exchange for their money. That's where it all begins. This book is about how to make profitable offers. Specifically, how to reliably turn advertising dollars into enormous profits using a combination of pricing, value, guarantees, and naming strategies. I call the proper combination of these components a grand slam offer. I chose this term partially in homage to the above quote from Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, and because, like a grand slam in baseball, a grand slam offer is both very good and very rare. Additionally, to extend the baseball metaphor, it takes no more effort to make a grand slam offer than to strike out. The difference is dictated by the skill of the marketer and how well he connects his offer with his audience's desires. In business, you can have so-so offers, the singles and doubles that keep the game going, pay the bills, and keep the lights on. But unlike baseball, where a grand slam scores a maximum of 4 runs, a grand slam offer in the business world can score you a 1,000-fold payoff and a result in a world where you never need to work again. It would be like connecting with the ball so well during one single at-bat that you automatically win every World Series for the next 100 years. It takes years of practice to make something as complicated as hitting a major league fastball into the bleachers look effortless. Your stance, vision, prediction, ball speed, bat speed, and hit placement all must be perfect. In marketing and customer acquisition, the process of getting new customers, there are just as many variables that must all align to truly knock it out of the park. But with enough practice and enough skill, you can turn the wild world of acquisition, which will throw curveballs at you every day, into a home run derby, knocking offer after offer out of the stadium. To everyone else, your success will look unbelievable. But to you, it will just feel like just another day at work. The greatest hitters of all time also have many strikeouts, just as there are many failed offers in the track record of great marketers. We learn skills through failure and practice. We do this knowing that 9 times out of 10 we will be wrong. We still act boldly, hoping for that offer we connect with so well that it results in our big payoff. The good news is that in business, you only need to hit 1 Grand Slam offer to retire forever. I have done this 4 or 5 times in my life. As for my track record, I have a 36-to-1 lifetime return on my advertising dollars over my business career. Consider this my lifetime batting average, if you will. That means for every $1 I spend on advertising, I get $36 back, a 3,600% return. That is my average over 8 years, and I continue to improve. This book is my attempt to share that skill with you, with a specific focus on building Grand Slam offers, so you can experience the same levels of success. It's also the first in a series of books meant to get entrepreneurs to financial freedom. In plain words, fuck you, money. Subsequent books in the series will look more deeply at getting more customers, converting more prospects into clients, making those clients worth more, and other lessons I wish I had learned earlier in scaling my businesses. Pro tip, faster, deeper learning by reading and listening at the same time. Here's a life hack I discovered a long time ago. If you listen to the audiobook while reading the ebook or physical book, you will increase your reading speed and retain more information. The contents are being stored in more places in your brain. This is how I read most things worth reading. I've priced my products as cheap as the platforms will allow me, so this isn't a ploy to make an extra 99 cents. Promise. If you want to give it a try, go ahead and grab the audio version and see for yourself. You might find it as valuable as I have, as someone who struggles to stay focused. It took 2 days to talk this book out loud and record it. I figured I'd put this hack at the beginning of the book, so you had a chance to do it if you found the first chapter valuable enough to earn your attention. Section 1. How We Got Here. The Ugly Truth. Chapter 1. How We Got Here. Magic will find those with pure hearts, even when all seems lost. Morgan Rhodes. December 24th, 2016. Christmas Eve. The room was pitch black. My shoes stuck to a floor covered in dried soda and crushed bits of candy. My nostrils were full with the smell of stale popcorn. We had just shown up too late to get good seats and ended up pressed near the front of the theater. Just a few rows in front of me, the movie's blazing projection occupied my entire field of view. In the reflected glow, I could see the outlines of Layla's family's faces. They may as well have been hypnotized. I envied them. They sat, entranced, soaking in their paid time off for Christmas. Must be nice. Anybody else would have missed it, but Layla, my girlfriend at the time, knew me too well. Anybody else would have thought I was watching the movie, but Layla could tell I was staring blankly at the screen, my eyes not tracking with the movie. My face was pale. My cheekbones and jawline appeared gone. Weeks of chronic stress had killed my appetite. What's wrong? She asked. I didn't answer. She rested her hand on mine to get my attention. I didn't react. Within moments, her fingers tightened around my wrist, and she looked at me, her eyes searching for mine. Your heart is racing, she whispered, concerned. Without asking, she took my pulse. It was 100 beats per minute, nearly twice what it should be for a fit 27-year-old male at rest in a cool, dark room. What's going on? She asked more forcibly, but still whispering. The truth is, I was terrified. A few hours earlier, I looked like a giant. I sat scrunched up in a children's miniature play chair. My knees almost touched my chest, even with my feet firmly planted on the old beige carpeted floor. My laptop felt hot, sitting atop my steeply angled knees. Dolls and toys were scattered around me. They stared at me with wide eyes and toothy grins, motionless. I had been their entertainment for the past few weeks. I was in Layla's parents' house. They had recently become grandparents and used this spare bedroom as a playroom when their children visited. I didn't have a place to live, so they were letting Layla and I stay there, quote, as long as we needed, end quote. They had let me use the children's playroom as my office for my business, which at this point felt almost as make-believe as the stories they had told their grandchildren in this room. I literally felt like I was playing dress-up, except the stakes were real, and this was my life. My ears were hot and red from the phone being pressed against them for what felt like hours. I kept switching hands because my arms would tire from holding the phone up for so long. I'm sorry, Mr. Homozy, the voice on the other end of the line said. We have to hold on to these phones for the next 6 months. We've seen some irregular activity. So this is precautionary. Are you fucking kidding me? 120 grand? I said. A precaution? I'm sorry, sir. Our underwriting team... Yeah, I heard you, I said, cutting him off. I don't accept that. Sir, it's not up to me. It's just our... What am I going to tell my salesman? There's a baby on the way, and another one. Are you going to tell him he's not going to buy his pregnant wife and newborn food? Are you going to pay his mortgage for him? I was seething. Sir, he began again, with unfazed apathy, just trying to deliver the news. It's not yours to take. My aggression was quickly turning into desperation. Shit, just send me half so I can pay my employees. It's Christmas Eve, for fuck's sake. Sir, we're going to be holding on to the entirety of your funds for the next 6 months per your agreement. The voice faded into the distance. Fuck. I hung up and checked my accounts. $23,036. I owed my salesman a $22,000 commission check for $120,000 in sales I never got. Without wanting to give myself the opportunity to think about it, I wired it to him. Negative, $22,000. Payment successful. Balance, $1,036. Fuck. The sunlight blinded me as we emerged from the matinee. Family shuffled in and out through the revolving doors, making their happy memories. I was in a daze. Layla led me to the car, her hand wrapped firmly around mine. What's wrong? What happened? She asked. The money isn't coming. What do you mean? It's delayed? I exhaled in defeat. They're keeping it all. Can they do that? Apparently. I said stoically, trying to maintain my composure in front of her parents. What are you going to do about the commissions? I already paid him. Everything. I said without looking at her. Layla's concern turned to dread. We sat in silence the whole way home. I stared out the window. She held my hand in hers. It was more comforting than I anticipated. We'll get through this. 30 days earlier, I decided to go all in on this new business I called Gym Watch. Here was the idea. I would fly around the country to gyms and fill them up to full capacity using this new methodology that hinged on an offer I had perfected when I owned my chain of gyms. Leading up to this moment, I had sold 5 of my 6 gyms. The funds from selling them, my life's work, I'd put into an account that I had with a new partner. This money was supposed to be the seed money for our new company. I was finally going to realize some level of success. My alarm went off. I groggily swung my arm over, blindly clawing at the bedside table. I switched off the alarm, while Layla, somehow, managed to sleep through the commotion. I laid there silently, pulling up the bank accounts, a daily ritual. The balance said $300. Wait, that couldn't be right. There was $46,000 in here yesterday. My adrenaline surged. Looking closer, I saw minus $45,700. Payment successful. I was frantic. The money from selling all my gyms was gone. I checked where the money went. To my, quote, partner, end quote. He had taken all the money out. Fuck. The last 4 years of my life had vanished that fast. I officially had nothing, and even less to show for it. No gyms, no equipment, no employees, nothing. I felt dead inside. Adding insult to injury in that same 30-day period, my mother was in critical condition because of a near-fatal accident and was still under 24-hour supervision. And I had totaled my car in a head-on collision at 60 miles an hour and earned a DUI as my consolation prize. This was the cherry on top. My one saving grace during this time was selling a new challenge offer at a gym and collecting all the cash up front as my fee for turning their business around. So I did the only thing I knew. I sold. My salesman had done $120,000 in a single month and I owed him $22,000 in commissions. The problem was, the $120,000 never came. We need to talk, I said, as Layla and I went to the other room. I woke up to the courage to speak, but stared at the floor, embarrassed. I've got nothing, I said to her. I'm a sinking ship, and you don't have to stay here with me. She grabbed my chin and pulled my face towards hers, so she could look into my eyes. I would sleep with you under a bridge if it came to that. I would have cried tears of joy, but I was so emotionally exhausted that my response appeared apathetic. I wouldn't stay with me. So are we still going to do these launches starting tomorrow? She asked. All my friends quit their jobs to do this. She was being matter of fact, but it still stung. I felt defeated. Listen, this could go horribly wrong. I trust you. We'll figure it out. I had 2 things left at this point. A grand slam offer and an old business credit card with a $100,000 limit from when I had my gyms. On the day after Christmas, 2 days after the gut-wrenching call with the payment processor, we were scheduled to launch 6 new gyms at the same time. Between airfare, hotels, rental cars, gas, and ad spend, all multiplied by 6, I was going to be spending $3,300 per day of money I didn't have. My last dollar had gone to paying my salesman. I still remember my hand shaking as the advertisement went live. Off to on. Just like that, I was going into debt at a rate of $412 per working hour. Just like that, $3,300 per day began getting deducted from my account. Minus $3,300, I now officially have nothing. Minus $3,300, I now officially have less than nothing. Minus $3,300, I have $10,000 less than nothing. Minus $3,300, this one decision is going to ruin my future forever. But things started shaping up. Here's what happened that month, January 2017, as documented by my old processing records I dug up. In the physical book, there's a chart that I am referencing. You can see the month along the left column, and the revenue collected on that month along the right. We made $100,117. It was just enough to cover the $3,300 a day. that had been coming off the credit card. It was actually working. I could hardly believe it. I threw the Hail Mary, and the universe had caught it. I went from looking up bankruptcy lawyers to figuring out what to do with $3 million in profits accrued within the first 12 months. It felt surreal, and in hindsight, it still kind of does. By the end of the year, we were doing $1.5 million per month. 12 months from then, $4.4 million per month. 24 months after that, we crossed $120 million in sales and donated $2 million to help fund equal opportunity in low-income areas. We met and befriended Arnold Schwarzenegger, my lifelong hero, and we were asked to become board members of his charity, After School All-Stars. 12 months after that, we now have a portfolio of 7 8-figure and multi-8-figure companies across a variety of industries, photography, publishing, fitness, business consulting, beauty, and business types, brick-and-mortar chains, software, service, e-commerce, training and education. Our portfolio companies now do about $1.6 million per week and growing. I say this because honestly, I can't believe it. All of this was because of a girl who believed in me, a credit card, and a Grand Slam offer. I know I teleported you from rag to riches, and the natural question is, how? That's what I'm going to use the rest of this book and the remaining books and free courses in acquisition.com to break down. The skill of making offers saved me from bankruptcy and likely saved my life. I've made so many mistakes in my life. I've made so many bad life decisions. I've hurt people knowingly and mistakenly. I've done bad things with good intentions. I say this because I am human. I don't pretend to have the answers. I have my own demons that I battle every day. But despite my many shortcomings, I've still managed to get really good at this one thing, and I'd like to share that with you. I can teach you how to build great offers. I don't know who you are. Yes, you, the one listening to this. But thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for allowing me to do work I find meaningful. Thank you for giving me the most valuable asset you have, your attention. I promise to do my very best to give you a positive return on it. Here's your first piece of good news. If you are listening to this, then you already are in the top 10%. Most people buy stuff and then promptly ignore it. I can also throw out a spoiler. The further you get in this book, the bigger the nuggets become. Just watch. This book delivers. The world needs more entrepreneurs. It needs more fighters. It needs more magic. And that's what I'm sharing with you. Magic. Chapter 2. Grand Slam Offers. Make people an offer so good that you'd feel stupid saying no. Travis Jones. I was 23 years old, and to quote Ruth from Ozark, I didn't know shit about fuck. But there I was, in a Las Vegas penthouse hotel room, along with 10 business owners learning about marketing and sales, in my most fashionable Beast Mode t-shirt, a shirt I had gotten for free, and one of the 5 shirts I owned at the time. Truthfully, I was anxious, self-conscious, and thought I was making a huge mistake. I paid $3,000 of money I didn't have to get a seat at the table. I knew I needed to learn. Everyone there had a business except me. I was planning on starting one, a gym. TJ, the organizer, had multiple successful businesses. While going over the agenda, I remember he made an offhand comment about making $1 million that year. $1 million. I was spellbound. I want to be like this guy. I'll do anything. The problem was, I didn't know what any of them were talking about. KPIs, CPLs, conversion rates. My head was spinning as I pretended like I knew what they were talking about. But I didn't, and I'm bad at pretending. Between sessions, TJ found me. He could tell I was way over my head. TJ was kind, curious, and caring. After a little bit of small talk, he asked me a simple question that changed my life forever. Do you want to know the secret to sales? I had never sold anything in my life. I never even read a book on it. I just recently learned what the term even meant. Seriously. I leaned forward, intent to download every syllable that he spoke right into my brain. I opened my notebook and stared at him with intent. I was ready for the secret. He looked at me soberly and said, make people an offer so good, they would feel stupid saying no. I nodded, wrote it down, underlined it, and circled it. And with that, my entire worldview of selling was transformed. Make people an offer so good, they would feel stupid saying no. My mind was racing. I didn't have to be skilled or even any good. I just had to come up with things that anyone would say yes to. The greatest game of my life had now begun. What this book is about. At some point, every successful business owner was a wantrepreneur, a person full of ideas and frustrated at having potential to spare. Something clicks when they realize the horrible trade they and so many people make, trading their freedom for falsely perceived security. Their discomfort compounds. And once the discomfort of staying the same surpasses the discomfort of change, they take the leap. I'm going to be an entrepreneur so I can be free, they tell themselves. Free to do whatever I want, whenever I want, with whomever I want. Some learned about entrepreneurship through personal development. Others got into it through a franchise. Others bought courses. And some just said, fuck it, I'm doing it, and I'll make it work. And make it work they did. Most of us opened up shop with the intention of helping people in some way. Many times, this assistance is in some way related to something that's affected us personally. We set out to give back by providing to others by helping them solve a problem that once plagued us. Then again, sometimes this isn't our way in. In either case, we cling to the dream of making more and being freer than we are now. Many of us thought naively that owning a business would be our crowning accomplishment, a final destination, when in reality, it was just the beginning. Somehow, in the transition between passionate to helping others and owning my first business, we gradually realized that we don't even know the first thing about business, let alone turning a profit. We may know a lot about our passion, about why we started the business, but that doesn't mean we know anything about succeeding in business. Much to the disappointment of idealists on the sidelines, succeeding in business means getting prospective customers to trade us money for our services, our passion for their hard-earned coins. That's the agreement. The only way to facilitate that exchange, to transact, to literally carry out business as a business, is by making the prospect an offer. What's an offer anyways? The only way to conduct a business is through a value exchange, a trade of dollars for value. The offer is what initiates this trade. In a nutshell, the offer is the goods and services you agree to provide, how you accept payment, and the terms of the agreement. It is what begins the process of getting customers and making money. It is the first thing that any new customer will interact with in your business. Since the offer is what attracts new customers, it is the lifeblood of your business. No offer, no business, no life. Bad offer, negative profit, no business, miserable life. Decent offer, no profit, stagnating business, stagnating life. Good offer, some profit, okay business, okay life. Grand slam offer, fantastic profit, insane business, freedom. This book helps entrepreneurs craft those grand slam offers. These are the offers that are so effective, profitable, and life-changing that it seems like they could only be the result of luck. That's how it looks to an untrained eye, anyway. As you likely know now, I have crafted thousands of offers over the last decade. Most have failed, some did okay, and some struck gold. But I never really knew why. As Dr. Bergelman, a famous Stanford Business School professor, said, "It is far better to understand why you failed than to be ignorant of why you succeeded." But as the data started rolling in, what seemed like luck and fortune was closer to a repeatable framework. I'd been fortunate enough to strike gold enough times to document these frameworks and have gotten lightning to strike twice. I've put the steps and components of those frameworks in a logical and digestible format so they are actually useful today, like now. I'm giving you action instead of a sad but typical book of vague business theories and mental masturbation. The two main problems most entrepreneurs face and how this book solves them. Although you can make a list of the problems you face a mile long, which is a great way to stress yourself out, all these problems typically stem from the big two kahunas. One, not enough clients. Two, not enough cash. In other words, excess profit at the end of the month. Seems obvious, right? It costs more time and money to get clients, thereby solving issue one, and that money is coming from the profit margins, which create problem two. What's more annoying, prospects savagely compare and belittle our services in favor of cheaper and crappier alternatives, with the cheapest one winning. This, of course, when winning means getting to work for more for even less. Sad face. Let's say you've slashed prices to get more customers. You may even have a full client load, but here you are, barely making it because profit margins are too thin. Competition becomes a race to the bottom. If you're struggling with one or both of these issues, you're not alone. I've been there. Heck, I think every entrepreneur has these same challenges. I also want you to know that it's not your fault. Typical models weren't designed for profit maximization. They were designed by companies who have boatloads of funding and can operate at a loss for years. When these models are used in the real world, business owners just barely get by. They essentially buy themselves a job and work 100 hours a week to avoid working 40. Crappy trade. My guess is that if you're anything like me, you signed up for something better. Keep an open mind. The contents of this book, if executed, can transform your business fast. It's okay if you're not into money numbers or business models. I've done all that work for you. I'm walking through the process step by step in these pages. I'm going to explain each of the two big problems we touched on above in detail, including why they don't work. Then I'm going to show you the solutions. And to wrap this adventure up, I'll explain how to enhance value to maximize how much you make per customer so that you can outmarket everyone and stack cash. We use this offer model for every niche we work with. Chiros, dentists, gyms, agencies, plumbers, roofers, dog walkers, physical products, software, brick and mortar stores, and so many more. And it's amazing how fast things can improve with each and every one of them when they use this framework. What's in it for you? I've made every dumb business mistake in the book. Now you can learn from my embarrassing, brutal, multi-million dollar fuck-ups without having to suffer the same pain yourself. Building these businesses has been a very hard and emotional journey for me. I wouldn't trade these experiences for the world. However, if this book helps just one entrepreneur avoid suffering as I did, keep their business open, or accomplish their dreams, it will all be worth it. If you're willing to exchange the time it takes to watch two episodes of your favorite TV show and really study this book, and if you implement even a single offer component, I can guarantee you will add more clients and more dollars to your bottom line. Reading this book and taking it to heart will be the single greatest return on time for your business. Nothing else will allow you to do what this book can do in the same amount of time. That is a promise. As a side benefit, implementing a new offer is about one of the easiest things to do in a business. So you really can do this. This isn't some management practice or culture building hoodoo. This is the real how you sell shit for lots of money type stuff. What's in it for me? I give all these materials, this book, the accompanying course, and all other books and courses which you can find at acquisition.com for free or at cost in order to help as many people as humanly possible make more and serve more. I've made these with the intention of providing more value than you can get from a $1,000 course, any $30,000 coaching program, and hilariously more than $200,000 college degree. And I do this because although I could sell these materials in that format, I just don't want to. I've made my money doing this stuff, not teaching how to do this stuff, contrary to most of the marketing community at large. So my model is different. I'll explain more in a second. That being said, there are two key archetypes I'm trying to provide value to with my published materials. For archetype number one, entrepreneurs under $3 million per year in revenue, my goal is to help you get there and earn your trust. Try just a couple of tactics from this book, watch them work, then try a few more, watch them work, and so on. The more you see results in your own business, the better. Once you succeed, you'll become archetype number two. Entrepreneurs at minimum between $3 to $10 million a year in revenue. Once you get there, or if that's you now, I'd be honored to invest in your business and help you cross 30, 50, or even 100 million plus. I don't sell coaching, masterminds, or courses, or anything like that. Instead, I have a portfolio of companies I take equity interest in. I use the infrastructure, resources, and teams of all my companies to fast-track their growth. But don't believe me yet. We just met. If you're curious, my business model is simple, just like the four-piece pyramid logo of acquisition.com. Step one, provide value at no cost, far in excess to what the rest of the marketplace charges for. Step two, have entrepreneurs use the materials that actually work and make money helping more folks. Step three, earn the trust of the hyper-executor business owners who use the frameworks to scale their businesses to $3 to $10 million per year and beyond. Step four, invest in those businesses to make more impact at scale while helping every single other entrepreneur for free. If you look carefully, the process reverse engineers success. I think it's pretty cool. Here's how. I know these business owners can execute the frameworks I have without handholding, and therefore would be very likely to succeed with the next set of frameworks. Getting to 30 million, 50 million, 100 million looks different than getting to 3 to 10 million. They know my style works for them because it already has. So we operate on shared trust. I trust they can execute, and they trust that our stuff works, again, because it already has, all while helping everyone else go free. So it allows me to preemptively avoid failures and dramatically increase success likelihood. Let me show you how much. At the time of this writing, every business I have started since March of 2017 has achieved a $1.5 million per month run rate. At least. According to the Small Business Administration, the odds of a single business even achieving $10 million a year, or $833,000 per month, which is almost half of what I just said, are 0.4%. Or 1 in 250. Having it happen four times in a row is 0.4% times 0.4% times 0.4% times 0.4%. Or in other words, very, very, very low probability that it was luck. As such, I can say with conviction that we know how to recreate success using the frameworks I share over and over again. They work because they are timeless business principles. I actively visualize every day how it felt to wake up in the middle of the night in cold sweats, wondering how I'd make payroll. That gut-wrenching meditation keeps me hungry as an entrepreneur, but also grateful for my security and peace of mind. I want the latter for you and anyone else who gives a damn about what they do. Fair enough? Cool. So let's get to it. Basic outline of this book. This book is intended to be a resource. As a resource, I mean it will be something that you read through, then keep in your toolbox, coming back to it again and again. And says, never memorize anything you can look up. Business is not a spectator sport. You're not cramming for some midterm, and you're not some limp-wristed philosopher. You do work, and to work, you need tools. This, my friend, is one of those tools. General outline. Section 1. How we got here. You just finished it. Section 2. Pricing. How to charge lots of money for stuff. Section 3. Value. Create your offer. How to make something so good, people line up to buy. Section 4. Enhancing your offer. How to make your offer so good, they feel stupid saying no. Section 5, Next Steps, How to Make This Happen in the Real World. For free courses and books so good they grow your business without your consent, go to acquisition.com. Section 2, Pricing, How to Charge Lots of Money for Stuff. Chapter 3, Pricing, The Commodity Problem. Think Different, Steve Jobs. Grow or Die is a core tenet at our companies. We believe every person, every company, and every organism is either growing or dying. Maintenance is a myth. What this means is, if your company isn't growing, it's dying. This is a sobering reality for many of us. I learned the hard way, and my business suffered for a long time because of it. Let me explain. The market is continuously growing. The stock market grows at 9% per year. If we aren't growing at 9% per year, we are falling behind. Maintenance, in the most generic sense, would be 9% per year growth, year over year. Furthermore, if you're in a growing marketplace, then you might have to grow at 20 to 30% per year, just to keep up, or risk falling behind. So you can see how maintenance is a myth. So then, what does it take to grow? Thankfully, just three simple things. One, get more customers. Two, increase their average purchase value. Three, get them to buy more times. That's it. Sure, there are lots of ways to acquire customers and zillions of ways to increase order value and purchase frequency, but simply put, that's it. Those are the only three ways to grow. Example, if I sell 10 clients a month and a client is worth $1,000 to me over their lifetime through average cart value times number of average purchases, then my business will cap at $10,000 per month, aka 10 times $1,000. 10 new clients per month times $1,000 lifetime value equals $10,000 per month in max revenue. If you want to grow, you've either got to sell more clients every month while maintaining suitable margins, or have them be worth more by increasing the profit per purchase or number of times they buy. That's it. Author note, only two ways to grow. To simplify this concept even more, there are really only two ways to grow: get more customers and increase each customer's value. Increasing each customer's value has two sub-buckets. One, increasing profit per purchase. Two, increasing the number of times they buy. For the purpose of this book, I highlight both of those sub-buckets as individual growth paths. I did this because I think it will be easier to understand the money models that will come in Volume 3. All three, getting more customers, increasing their average purchase value, and getting them to buy more, are repeated themes in this book. But if you seek simplicity, both increasing average purchase value and increasing the number of times a customer buys results in one outcome: increasing each customer's value. Business terms. Before going any further and to better flesh out the concepts that will follow, we should take a second to define and better understand some key business concepts. When I stood in that Las Vegas penthouse in my Beast Mode t-shirt, I was clueless about such terms. Let me help you be better than, well, me. Gross profit. The revenue minus the direct cost of servicing an additional customer. If I sell lotion for $10 and it costs me $2, my gross profit is $8, or 80%. If I sell agency services for $1,000 per month and it costs me $100 per month in labor to run that client's advertising, then my gross profit is $900, or 90%. Note, this is not net profit. Net profit is what's left over after all expenses are paid, not just the direct cost of fulfillment. Lifetime value. The gross profit accrued over the entire lifetime of a customer. This is gross profit multiplied by the number of purchases an average customer will make over their lifetime. Using the example above, if the average customer stays 5 months and they pay $1,000 per month while it costs me $100 per month to fulfill, then their lifetime value is $4,500. Here's the breakdown. Revenue equals $1,000 per month times 90% gross margins times 5 months equals $4,500 lifetime value, or LTV. Note that the indirect costs like admin, software, rent, etc. are not included in LTV. Note, you will find different definitions for lifetime value depending on the source. The biggest difference is that some sources only count total revenue, while others focus on gross profit over the lifespan. I focus on gross profit. You may also see me refer to this as LTGP, or lifetime gross profit, in other texts, just for clarity's sake. Value-driven versus price-driven purchases. This book was intended to be a textbook for any business that wants to grow. I've spent, and continue to spend, hundreds of hours on calls and in-person meetings consulting entrepreneurs on crafting their offers. I've seen the ones that take off into the stratosphere and those that fizzle. Having a Grand Slam offer makes it almost impossible to lose. But why? What gives it such an impact? In short, having a Grand Slam offer helps with all three of the requirements for growth: getting more customers, getting them to pay more, and getting them to do so more times. How, you ask? It allows you to differentiate yourself from the marketplace. In other words, it allows you to sell your product based on value, not on price. Commoditized equals price-driven purchases, aka a race to the bottom. Differentiated equals a value-driven purchase, aka sell in a category of one with no comparison. Yes, market matters, which I'll expound on in the next chapter. Commodity, as I define it, is a product available from many places. For that reason, it's prone to purchases based on price instead of value. If all products are equal, then the cheapest one is the most valuable by default. In other words, if a prospect compares your product to another and thinks, these are pretty much the same, I'll buy the cheaper one, then they commoditized you. How embarrassing. But really, it's one of the worst experiences a value-driven entrepreneur can have. This is a massive problem for the entrepreneur because commodities are valued at the point of market efficiency. This means that the marketplace drives the price point down through competition until the margins are just enough to keep the lights on, just enough to become a slave to their business. The business makes just enough to justify the owner waiting anxiously for things to turn around. And by the time that lie is realized, they are in too deep to pivot, at least until now. A Grand Slam offer solves this problem. But what does a Grand Slam offer do? All right, let's start by defining a Grand Slam offer. It's an offer you present to the marketplace that cannot be compared to any other product or service available, combining an attractive promotion, an unmatchable value proposition, a premium price, and an unbeatable guarantee with a money model, aka payment terms, that allows you to get paid to get new customers, forever removing the cash constraint on business growth. In other words, it allows you to sell in a category of one, or to apply another great phrase, to sell in a vacuum. The resulting purchasing decision for the prospect is now between your product and nothing. So you can sell at whatever price you get the prospect to perceive, not in comparison to anything else. As a result, it gets you more customers at higher ticket prices for less money. If you like fancy marketing terms, it breaks down to this. 1. Increase response rates, think clicks. 2. Increase conversions, think sales. 3. Premium prices, think charging a lot of money. Having a Grand Slam offer increases your response rates to advertisements, aka more people will click or take action on an advertisement they see containing a Grand Slam offer. If you pay the same amount for eyeballs, but 1. More people respond, 2. More of those responses buy, and 3. They buy for higher prices, your business grows. I've struck gold on my fair share of offers. Not because I've got some superpower, but because I've just done this a lot of times and failed even more. I've sorted through the crap that chronically fails and pocketed all the stuff that reproducibly succeeds and put it into this book. Here's the key takeaway from all this. A business does the same work in both cases, with a commoditized offer or a Grand Slam offer. The fulfillment is the same. But if one business uses a Grand Slam offer and another uses a commodity offer, the Grand Slam offer makes that business appear as if it had a totally different product. And that means a value-driven versus price-driven purchase. If you have a commodity offer, you will compete on price, having a price-driven purchase versus a value-driven purchase. Your Grand Slam offer, however, forces a prospect to stop and think differently to assess the value of your differentiated product. Doing this establishes you as your own category, which means it's too difficult to compare prices, which means you recalibrate the prospect's value meter. Real-life Grand Slam offer money math, before and after. Quick backstory. One of our companies is a software that advertising agencies use to work leads for their customers. Using this software, agencies transform their offer from a commoditized offer of lead generation services to a Grand Slam offer of pay-for-performance. Let me show you the multiplicative effect it has on revenue for business. While rounded for illustration's sake, the values I will share with you are based on real numbers a lead generation agency selling services to brick-and-mortar businesses experience. Old commoditized way. Price-driven. Race to the bottom. Commoditized offer, $1,000 down, then $1,000 per month retainer for agency services. I will read through the chart that is displayed. Advertising spend, $10,000. Impressions reach, 300,000. Response rate, 0.0013. Appointments booked, 40. Show rate, 75%. Appointment showed, 30. Closing percentage, 16%. Appointments closed, 5. Price, $1,000. Total, $5,000. ROAS, or return on advertising spend, 0.5 to 1. Here's the breakdown. At 0.5 to 1 return on advertising spend, you lose money getting customers. But But in 30 days, those five customers will pay another $1,000 each, bringing you $10,000 in total and breaking even. The next month, the $5,000 that comes in will be your first profitable month. And each month thereafter will be profitable, assuming they all stay. This is an example of a commoditized service, normal agency work. There's a million of them, and they all look the same. Commoditized businesses and offers have a harder time getting responses from ads because all their marketing looks the same as everyone else's. Note, it all looks the same because they're all making the same offer. You pay us to work, we do work, maybe you get results from that work, maybe you don't. It's reasonable, but easily duplicated and subject to commoditization. This commoditization creates a price-driven purchase. You are forced to be priced competitively to get clients and to stay that way to keep them. If the client sees a cheaper version of the same thing, then the value discrepancy will cause them to swap providers. This is a dilemma. Lose this client, the rest of your clients, and potential clients, or stay competitive. Your margins become so thin, they vanish. Furthermore, it's hard to get prospects to say yes and keep them saying yes unless you're hypervigilant about clients commoditizing your business by staying, again, competitive. And that's the problem with the old commoditized way. They're able to compare. Unless you switch to a Grand Slam offer, your prices will keep getting beat down. The business eventually dies or the entrepreneur throws in the towel. No bueno. We want to make an offer that's so different that you can skip the awkward explanation of why your product's different from everyone else's, which, if they have to ask, then they are probably too ignorant to understand the explanation anyways, and instead, just have the offer do that work for you. That's the Grand Slam offer way. Let's dive in to see the contrast in sales numbers. New Grand Slam offer way. Differentiated, incomparable, value-driven. Grand Slam offer. Pay one time, no recurring fee, no retainer, just cover the ad spend. I'll generate the leads and work your leads for you. And only pay me if people show up. And I'll guarantee you 20 people in your first month or you get your next month free. I'll also provide all the best practices from all their businesses just like yours. Daily sales coaching for your staff, tested scripts, tested price points and offers to swipe and deploy, sales recordings, and everything else you need to sell and fulfill your customers. I'll give you the entire playbook for insert industry absolutely free just for becoming a client. So in a nutshell, I'm feeding people into your business, showing you exactly how to sell them so that you get the highest prices, which means that you make the most money possible. Sound fair enough? It's clear that these are drastically different offers. But so what? Where's the money? Let's compare both in the chart below. Advertising spend, $10,000, same as before. Impressions reached, $300,000, same as before. Response rate, 0.0033, 2.5 times the response rate because you have a more appealing offer, so more people respond. Appointments booked, 40 becomes 100. Show rate, 75% stays the same. Appointment showed, 30 goes to 75. And that's just a result of numbers flowing down the funnel. Closing percentage goes from 16% to 37%. 2.3 times the closing because there's more value, so more people buy. Appointments closed goes from 5 to 28. That's just a result of the higher closing percentage. Price goes from $1,000 to start to $39.97, which is 4 times the price because we're charging a one-time fee versus recurring. The total collected upfront goes from $5,000 to $112,000. That's 22.4 times the cash upfront collected. And the ROAS goes from 0.5 to 1 to 11.2 to 1, which means you're getting paid to get new customers. Breakdown. You spend the same amount of money for the same eyeballs. Then you get 2.5 times more people to respond to your advertisement because it's a more compelling offer. From there, you close 2.5 times as many people because the offer is so much more compelling. From there, you're able to charge 4 times higher prices up front. The end result is 2.5 times 2.5 times 4 equals 22.4 times more cash collected up front. Yes, you just spent $10,000 to make $112,000. You just made money getting new customers. Comparison. Remember the old way? The way you lost half the ad spend up front? With the new way, you're making more money and getting more customers. This means that your cost to acquire a customer is so cheap relative to how much you make that your limiting factor becomes your ability to do the work you already love doing. Cash flow and acquire customers is no longer your bottleneck because it's 22.4 times more profitable than the old model. Yep, you read that right. This is the part in the action movie where you walk away from an explosion in slow motion. This is the exact Grand Slam offer we used with our software business that serves agencies. The numbers can become wild fast. I know, 22.4x better sounds unreasonable, but that's the point. If you play the same game everyone else does, you'll get the same results everyone else does. Mediocre. You hit singles and doubles, keep the lights on, but never get ahead. But remember the opening passage of this book. that when you align all the pieces, you can knock it out of the park so well that you win for good. In my first 18 months in business, we went from $500,000 a year to $28 million a year off of less than $1 million in ad spend. So when I say 20 to 1, 50 to 1, 100 to 1 returns, I mean it. When you get this right, the results are, well, unbelievable. Summary points. This chapter illustrated the basic problem with commoditization and how Grand Slam offers solve that. This gets you out of the pricing war and into a category of one. The next chapter will focus on finding the correct market to apply our pricing strategies to. It's one of the most important things to get right. A Grand Slam offer given to the wrong audience will fall on deaf ears. We want to avoid that at all costs. We must detour from pricing for a moment to learn what to look for in a market. It's an essential box to check before continuing on our journey. Free gift number one, bonus tutorial. Start here. If you want a deeper dive, go to acquisition.com/training/offers and watch the first video in the free course, starring yours truly, about how I differentiate offers in businesses I consult with and get them charging premium prices. I also created some free SOPs and cheat codes that you can download for free so you can implement faster. Enjoy. Pricing, Chapter 4. Finding the right market, a starving crowd. The seed that fell on good soil represents those who truly hear and understand God's word and produce a harvest of 30, 60, or even 100 times as much as has been planted. Matthew 13:23, NLT. A marketing professor asked his students, if you were going to open up a hot dog stand and you could only have one advantage over your competitors, which would it be? Location, quality, low prices, best taste. The students kept going until eventually they had run out of answers. They looked at each other, waiting for the professor to speak. The room finally fell quiet. The professor smiled and replied, a starving crowd. You could have the worst hot dogs, terrible prices, and be in a terrible location. But if you're the only hot dog stand in town and the local college football game breaks out, you're going to sell out. That's the value of a starving crowd. At the end of the day, if there's a ton of demand for a solution, you can be mediocre at business, have a terrible offer, and have no ability to persuade people, and you can still make money. An example of this was the toilet paper shortage at the beginning of COVID-19. There was no offer, the pricing was atrocious, and there was no compelling sales pitch. But because the crowd was so big and so starving, rolls of toilet paper were going for $100 or more. That's the value of a starving crowd. Selling newspapers. A good friend of mine, Lloyd, owned a software business that served newspapers for almost a decade. They set up digital ad services on newspaper websites with a few clicks and instantly helped them sell a whole new ad product. He only charged them a percentage of revenue he added, so if they made nothing, neither did he. It was pure gain for the papers and a great offer. But despite having a great offer and natural sales ability, his business began to decline. Being a high-achieving entrepreneur, he tried all different angles to solve the problem, but nothing worked. He couldn't figure out what the issue was. It was hard for me to see him struggle with this because I think Lloyd is much smarter than I am. And the answer seemed obvious to me. But watching him go through this has been a lesson that I have taken with me for life. Before I reveal it, what do you think the problem was? Product? Offer? Marketing and sales? His team? Let's break it down. It wasn't his product. That was great. It wasn't his offer. He had a zero-risk rev share model. It wasn't his sales skills. He was a natural salesman. So then, what was the problem? He was selling to newspapers. His market was shrinking by 25% every single year. He had looked at all the angles except for the most obvious one. Finally, after years of fighting an uphill battle in his market, he realized his market was the source of his problems and decided to downsize his company. Don't worry. The story has a second half. To illustrate the power of a market, as soon as COVID hit, Lloyd pivoted. He started an automated mask manufacturing company. With new technology, he brought the cost per mask down below what people could buy them from China. Within 5 months, he was doing millions per month. Same entrepreneur, different market. He applied his same skill set to a business he had zero experience in and was able to win. That's the power of picking the right market. I give you that story as a cautionary tale. Your market matters. Lloyd is a very smart human. He's obviously very capable, but we can all be blinded as entrepreneurs because we don't like to give up. We are so accustomed to solving impossible problems that we will keep ramming our heads into the wall. We hate quitting. But the reality is that everyone is affected by their market. So how do you pick the right market? What to look for? There is a market in desperate need of your abilities. You need to find it. And when you do, you will capitalize, all while wondering what took you so long. Don't be romantic about your audience. Serve the people who can pay you what you're worth. And remember that picking a market, like anything, is always our choice. So choose wisely. In order to sell anything, you need demand. We are not trying to create demand. We are trying to channel it. That is a very important distinction. If you don't have a market for your offer, nothing that follows will work. This entire book sits atop the assumption that you have at least a, quote, normal market, which I define as a market that is growing at the same rate as the marketplace and that has common unmet needs that fall into one of three categories: improved health, increased wealth, or improved relationships. For example, Lloyd could have gone through this entire book and nothing in here would have worked for him. Why? Because he would be targeting newspapers, a dying market. That being said, having a great market is an advantage, but you can be in a normal market that's growing at an average rate and still make crazy money. Every market I've been in has been a normal market. You just don't actually want to be selling ice to Eskimos. Here are the basic tenets of what I look for in markets. Let's run them before we return to the offer. When picking markets, I look for four indicators. 1, pain. 2, purchasing power. 3, easy to target. 4, growing. 1, massive pain. They must not want, but desperately need, what I am offering. Pain can be anything that frustrates people about their lives. Being broke is painful. A bad marriage is painful. Waiting in line at the grocery store is painful. Back pain, ugly smile pain, overweight pain. Humans suffer a lot. So for us entrepreneurs, endless opportunity abounds. The degree of pain will be proportional to the price you will be able to charge. More on this in the value equation chapter. When they hear the solution to their pain, and inversely, what their life would look like without this pain, they should be drawn to your solution. I have a saying that I use to train sales teams. The pain is the pitch. If you can articulate the pain a prospect is feeling accurately, they will almost always buy what you are offering. A prospect must have a painful problem for us to solve and charge money for our solution. Pro tip. The point of good writing is for the reader to understand. The point of good persuasion is for the prospect to feel understood. 2. Purchasing power. A friend of mine had a very good system for helping people improve their resumes to get more job interviews. He was great at it. But try as he did, he could not get people to pay for his services. Why? Because they were all unemployed. This, again, may seem obvious, but he thought, these people are easy to target. They're in massive pain. There are plenty of them, and it's constantly adding new people. This is a great market. He just forgot a crucial point. Your audience needs to be able to afford the service you're charging them for. Make sure your targets have the money or access to the amount of money needed to buy your services at the prices you require to make it worth your time. 3. Easy to target. Let's say you have a perfect market, but no way of finding the people who comprise it. Well, making a grand slam offer will be difficult. I make my life easier by looking for easy to target markets. Examples of this are avatars that have associations they belong to, mailing lists, social media groups, channels they all watch, etc. If our potential customers are gathered together somewhere, then we can market to them. If searching them out, however, is like finding needles in a haystack, then it can be very difficult to get your offer in front of any potentially interested eyes. This point is tactical. It is reality, not theoretical. For instance, you may want to serve rich doctors, but if your ads are being displayed to nursing students, your offer will fall on deaf ears, no matter how good it is. Main point. You want to make sure you can target your ideal audience easily. Clarifying point. There is no issue wanting to serve rich doctors. They are easy to find. This is just illustrative that your promotions must be served to the right audience. 4. Growing. Growing markets are like a tailwind. They make everything move forward faster. Declining markets are like headwinds. They make all efforts harder. This was Lloyd's example. Newspapers had 3 of 4 makings of a great market. Lots of pain, purchasing power, easy to target. But they were shrinking. Fast. No matter how hard he tried, the entire marketplace was fighting against him. Business is hard enough, and markets move quickly. So you might as well find a good market to give you a tailwind to make the process easier. Making this real. Health, wealth, relationships. There are 3 main markets that will always exist. Health, wealth, and relationships. The reason that those will always exist is that there will always be tremendous pain when you lack them. There is always demand for solutions to these core human pains. The goal is to find a smaller subgroup within those larger buckets that is growing, has the buying power, and is easy to target. The other 3 variables. So if I were a relationship expert trying to find my avatar, I'd rather focus on second half of life relationship coaching for old timers than helping college students in relationships. Why? Because senior citizens who are alone are likely suffering more pain as they are near their deaths, have more buying power, money, and are easier to find, targeting, Lastly, at the time of this writing, there are more people turning 65 each year than turning 20, aka growing. That is the idea. Think about what you are good at in regards to health, wealth, and relationships, then think about who might value your service the most, aka is in the most pain, has the buying power to pay what you want, money, and can be found easily, targeting. As long as those three criteria are strong and the market isn't shrinking, you'll be in good shape. But how important to your success is finding a, quote, great market versus a, quote, normal market versus a, quote, bad market? The answer, it actually depends. Let me explain. Order of importance, three levers on success. It's unlikely you're going to be in a dying market like the newspaper example. It's also unlikely you're going to be selling toilet paper in COVID, a buying frenzy. You'll likely be in a normal market, and that's totally okay. There's a fortune to be made within normal markets. My single point here is that you can't be in a bad market or nothing will work. That being said, here's the simplest illustration of the order of importance between markets, offers, and persuasion skills. Starving crowd is more important than your offer strength, which is more important than your persuasion skills. Let's say you were to rate these elements on a scale of great, normal, and bad. You could essentially move down the line from left to right in order of importance. A quote, great rating on a higher order piece overpowers anything else lower on the priority scale. A quote, normal rating moves the buck to the next part of the equation. A quote, bad stops the equation unless a grade from a higher order component nullifies it. Here are a few examples. Example one, even if you had a bad offer and are bad at persuasion, you're going to make money if you're in a great market. If you're on the corner hawking hot dogs when the bar closes up at 2 a.m. with mobs of starving drunk folks, you're going to sell out of your hot dogs. Example two, most of us. If you are in a normal market and have a grand slam offer, you can make tons of money even if you're bad at persuasion. This is most people reading this book. That's why I wrote it. To help you maximize your success by learning to really build a grand slam offer. Example three, let's say you're in a normal market and have a normal offer. In order to be massively successful, you would have to be exceptionally good at persuasion. Then, and only then, would you succeed with your persuasive skills serving as the fulcrum for your success. Heck, many empires have been built by exceptional persuaders. It's just the hardest path to follow and requires the most effort and learning. Nailing your offer helps you shortcut this path to success. Otherwise, you will just have a normal business that takes exceptional skill to be successful. Nothing wrong with that, but probably not what you signed up for. Commit to the niche. I have a saying when coaching entrepreneurs on picking their target market. Don't make me niche slap you. Too often, a new entrepreneur half-heartedly tries one offer in one market, doesn't make $1 million, then mistakenly thinks this is a bad market. Most time, that's not actually the case. They just haven't found a grand slam offer yet to apply to that market. They think, I'll switch from helping dentists to helping chiropractors. That's it. When in reality, both of those are normal markets and represent billions of dollars of revenue. Either would work, just not both. You must pick one. No one can serve two masters. I have coined the term niche slap to remind entrepreneurs in my communities to commit once they pick. All businesses and all markets have unpleasant characteristics. The grass is never greener once you get to the other side. If you keep hopping from niche to niche, hoping that the market will solve your problems, you deserve to be niche slapped. You must stick with whatever you pick long enough to have trial and error. You will fail. In fact, you will fail until you succeed. But you will fail far longer if you keep changing who you market to, because you must start over from the beginning each time. So pick, then commit. Riches earn the niches. The other reason to commit to the niche is because of how much more you will make. Simply put, niching down will make you far more money. Author note, when to broaden. Advice for most people. For most, if you are under $10 million per year, niching down will make you more money. After that, it will depend on how narrow the niche is, or what is called TAM, total addressable market. A business can only grow to meet the total addressable market. That being said, for most people, getting to $10 million per year is already a 0.4% achievement. Only 1 in 250 businesses achieve this. So for 99.6% of readers below $10 million per year, it's almost always easier to serve fewer clients more narrowly. But if you want to go beyond that, you may, depending on the size of your TAM, have to broaden your audience by going up market, down market, or into an adjacent market where your existing services can provide value. For context, many companies expanded to $30 million plus per year serving a single niche. Chiropractors, gyms, plumbers, solar, roofers, salon owners, etc. If you were at $1 million or $3 million per year, Thinking you have capped and must expand, you are wrong. You just need to be better. When I truly grasped how much more profit I was leaving on the table, it changed my life. It was what took me from doing acquisition for anyone to teaching it to a specific avatar. In my instance, I decided on a micro gym owner with 100 members, a signed lease, at least one employee, and wanted to help clients lose weight. That's pretty specific compared to, quote, small business owners, or my favorite, quote, anyone who will pay me, which is common. And I was very specific. In that business, Gym Launch, we turned down, and still do, anyone who is not the avatar. That means no personal trainers, no online coaches, etc. Could I have helped them? Of course I could have. I mean, heck, the majority of our portfolio is comprised of non-gym companies. But in order to maintain product focus and high converting messaging, knowing exactly who the product was for was a game changer. It helped us know exactly who we were speaking to at all times and exactly whose problems we were solving. But simplicity and ease may not be enough to sway you. So let me illustrate why honing in on one niche will make you more money. Reason: you can literally charge 100 times more for the exact same product. Dan Kennedy was the first person to illustrate this for me, and I will do my best to pass on the torch to you in these pages. Niching product pricing example. Product and then price. Time management product. Price, $19. Time management for sales professionals. Price, $99. Time management for outbound B2B sales. Price, $499. Time management for outbound B2B power tools and gardening sales reps. Price, $1,997. Dan Kennedy taught me this, and it changed my life forever. Let's say you sold a generic course on time management. Unless you were some massive time management guru with a compelling or unique story, it would be unlikely it would turn into anything significant. What do you think, quote, yet another, end quote, time management course is valued at? $19, $29, sure. Nothing to write home about. Let's just say $19 for illustration's sake. Now we shall unleash the power of niche pricing in various stages on your product. So let's imagine you make the product more specific, keeping the same principles, and call it time management for sales professionals. All of a sudden, this course is for a more specific type of person. We could tie their increase to even one more sale or one more deal, and it would be worth more. But there are a lot of salespeople, so this might be a $99 product. Neat, but we can do better. So let's go down another level of niching and call our product time management for B2B outbound sales reps. Following the same principles of specificity, now we know our salespeople probably have very experienced deals and commissions. A single deal would easily net this salesman $500 or more, so it would be easy to justify a $499 price tag. This is already a 25x increase in price for almost an identical product. I could stop here, but I'm going one step further. Let's just niche down one last level. Time management for B2B outbound power tools and gardening sales reps. Boom. Think about it for a second. If you were a power tools outbound sales rep, you would think to yourself, this is made exactly for me, and would happily fork over maybe $1,000 or $2,000 for a time management program that could help you achieve your goal. The actual pieces of the program may be the same as the generic $19 course, but since they have been applied and the sales messaging could speak so much to this avatar, they will find it far more compelling and get more value from it in a real way. This concept applies to anything you decide to do. You want to be the guy who services this type of person or solves this type of problem. And even more niched, I solve this type of problem for this specific type of person in this unique counterintuitive way that reverses their deepest fear. That's why a fitness program for generic weight loss might be priced only at $19, while a fitness program designed and marketed only to shift nurses might be priced at $1,997, even though the core of the program is likely similar. Eat less, move more. End result, the market matters, your niche matters, and if you can sell the same product for 100 times the price, should you? I'll let you decide. Summary points. The purpose of this chapter is to reinforce two things. First, don't pick bad markets. Normal markets are fine, great markets are great. Second, once you pick, commit until you figure it out. If you try 100 offers, I promise you will succeed. Most people never try anything. Others fail once, then give up. It takes resilience to succeed. Stop personalizing. It's not about you. If your offer doesn't work, it doesn't mean you suck. It means your offer sucks. Big difference. You only suck if you stop trying. So try again. You'll never become world class if you stop after a failed attempt. If you find a crazy good market, ride it and ride it hard. If you pair a grand slam offer with a crazy market, you'll likely never need to work again. Seriously. So have this skill set, the ability to accurately assess markets by taking into account pain, money, targeting, and growth in your back pocket so that when lightning strikes, you can make sure it strikes twice. Having established how to nail a market, let's get back to pricing. The first step to making crazy money is charging premium prices. Free gift number two, bonus tutorial, winning markets. If you want to know more about how I pick markets and find niches that are profitable, go to acquisition.com/training/offers. Then watch Winning Markets for a short video tutorial. I've also included a free checklist to see how your market or niche measures up. It's absolutely free. Enjoy. Chapter 5, Pricing. Charge what it's worth. Charge as high a price as you can say out loud without cracking a smile. Dan Kennedy. January 2019. All I could see was black. My eyes felt glued shut. I was awake, but the fatigue in my temples felt like a 5-pound weight was duct taped to my skull, dragging my eyelids back down. I had to concentrate forcibly to open them. The details of the dimly lit room beamed in. I rolled over to the edge of the hotel room bed, feeling each and every muscle in my body as my weight shifted. Hunched on my side, I could see my clothes scattered on the floor. I was so beat the night before that I didn't even remember taking them off. I had just finished a 5-day gauntlet of keynote after keynote presentation. 2 days of presentations for our highest level clients, immediately followed by spending 2 days planning with our entire company, 135 plus employees. I had missed a FaceTime call from my father that day before. I didn't have anything on my agenda for the morning, so I quickly got up, slid into a hoodie and some sweats, and walked into the hallway to call him back. After the initial pleasantries, he immediately dove into why he was calling. Parental concern. "I saw the picture you posted of all your clients," he said, but in an unusually concerned tone. "I thought the event was for all your highest paying clients. I didn't know it was a big event. It looked like you had 1,000 people there." Alone in the hallway and struggling to shake the heavy weight of exhaustion still, I tried to gauge where his concern was coming from and what he was getting at. I'd explained this to him already. "It was only for our highest level clients. That wasn't all of our clients," I said. "Just the ones who pay $42,000 a year, our gym lords, like I told you. Every single person in that picture paid you $42,000. He sounded almost frightened at the idea. "Yeah, wild, right?" My voice was hoarse from days of speaking and thousands of 20-second conversations. "Is it legal what you're doing?" he asked. "Wow, that escalated quickly," I thought to myself. "Do they know you're paying you that much?" "Yes, it's legal, and of course they know. It's not like I'm magically siphoning money. That's a lot of money. I hope what you're giving them is worth it." I contemplated whether it was worth the effort to dive into this or just ignore it. But knowing this was going to be a thing, I took a deep breath and began to explain. "If I made you $239,000 extra this year, would you pay me $42,000? I asked, using $239,000 because it was the average increase in top-line revenue of a gym using our system for 11 months. "For sure," he said. "I mean, if I knew I was going to make that back. But what would I have to do?" "About 15 hours a week of work." "And how long would it take me to make the $239,000? 11 months. "And how much of the $42,000 would I have to pay you up front?" "Nothing. Just pay me as you start making money using the system." I watched it click. My dad got it. "Oh," he said. "Well, then yeah, I would do it." And that's why they do it too. Making shitloads of money breaks people's minds. It literally stretches their minds so far past what they can believe is possible, they assume you're doing something wrong or illegal. They literally can't even. Why? Because they think to themselves, "They can't be that much smarter than me, or work that much harder than me. So how is it possible for them to make 1,000 times more than me? Enough money that it would literally take 10 lifetimes for me to make what they make in a year." In the 3 years leading up to me writing this book, I took home over $1.2 million per month in profit, every single month. That's more than the compensation for the CEOs of Ford, McDonald's, Motorola, Yahoo, combined, every year, as a kid in his 20s. It angers those who believe that life isn't fair. It confuses others who cannot comprehend and believe that there must have been a mistake. And it inspires a select few who are bound for greatness. I hope that you are in the last category, because that is who I am writing this for. You can do this. You just need to learn how, and I'm going to show you. Price to value discrepancy. Quote, "I hope what you're giving them is worth it," end quote. Those words would probably sting for most, but when my dad said them to me, I just knew he didn't understand the value we were providing. What I want to show you is how to create and communicate value, aka the worth-itness of an offer. In order to understand how to make a compelling offer, you must understand value. The reason people buy anything is to get a deal. They believe that what they are getting, value, is worth more than what they are given in exchange for it, price. The moment the value they receive dips below what they are paying, they stop buying from you. This price-to-value discrepancy is what you need to avoid at all costs. After all, as Warren Buffett said, price is what you pay, value is what you get. The simplest way to increase the gap between price to value is by lowering the price. It's also, most of the time, the wrong decision for the business. Getting people to buy is not the objective of a business. Making money is. And lowering price is a one-way road to destruction for most. You can only go down to zero, but you can go infinitely high in the other direction. So unless you have a revolutionary way of decreasing your cost one-tenth compared to your competition, don't compete on price. As Dan Kennedy said, there's no strategic benefit to being the second cheapest in the marketplace, but there is for being the most expensive. So the goal of our Grand Slam offer will be to get more people to say yes at a higher price by increasing our value to price discrepancy. In other words, we will raise our price only after we have sufficiently increased our value. This way, they still get a great deal. Think buying $100,000 worth of value for only $10,000. It's money at a discount. Free gift number 3. Bonus tutorial and free downloads. Charge what it's worth. If you want to know how I create value discrepancies for B2B or B2C products, go to acquisition.com/training/offers course and then watch Charge What It's Worth for a short video tutorial. My goal is to gain your trust and deliver value in advance. As such, it's absolutely free. Enjoy. Why you should charge so much it hurts. Most business owners are not competing on price or value. In fact, they're not actually competing on anything at all. Their pricing process typically goes something like this. Step 1. Look at marketplace. Step 2. See what everyone else offers. Step 3. Take the average. Step 4. Go slightly below to remain, quote, competitive, end quote. Step 5. Provide what their competitors offer with a little more. Step 6. End up with a value proposition of more for less. And the big secret, those competitors they are copying are dead broke. So why on earth copy them? Pricing where the market is means you're pricing for market efficiency. Over time, in an efficient marketplace, more competitors enter offering a little more for a little less until eventually no one can provide any more for any less. At this point, a market reaches perfect efficiency, and the business owners participating make just enough at the end of the month to keep going. The bottom 10 to 20% of operators get washed out or lose the will to fight. Then fresh business owners enter with no idea and repeat the process of their forefathers, and around they go. In plain words, pricing this way means you are providing a service at just above what it costs for you to stay above water. We are not trying to barely stay above water. We are trying to make egregious amounts of money that will have your relatives asking if what you do is legal. Again, we are not trying to get the most customers. We are trying to make the most money. That being said, since there is no strategic benefit to being the second lowest priced player in your marketplace, allow me to give you a brief overview of why I see premium pricing as not only a very smart business decision, but a moral one. Furthermore, it's the only choice that will allow you to truly provide the most value, a unique and strong position in the marketplace. Let me introduce you to the virtuous cycle of price. I've used this framework in most of the materials I release because it needs to be consistently reinforced. The forces of the marketplace will grate on your belief system. You must stay strong and ignore them. Here's the basic premise of why you need to charge a premium if you want to best serve your customers. When you decrease your price, you decrease your client's emotional investment since it didn't cost them much. You decrease your client's perceived value of your service since it can't be that good if it's so cheap or priced the same as everyone else. You decrease your client's results because they do not value your service and are not invested. You attract the worst clients who are never satisfied until your service is free. And you destroy any margin you have left to be able to actually provide an exceptional experience, hire the best people, invest in your people, pamper your clients, invest in growth, invest in more locations or more scale, and everything else you had hoped in the goal of helping more people solve whatever problem it is that you solve. In essence, your world sucks. And to make matters worse, your service probably sucks because you are squeezing blood from the proverbial stone. There's just not enough money left over to make something exceptional. As a result, you fall in line with the armies of average businesses that race to the bottom. I've lived that life. It's terrible. If you love your customers and your employees, please stop shortchanging them when there is a better way. Here's the reverse. This is what happens when you raise your prices. When you raise your prices, you increase your client's emotional investment. You increase your client's perceived value of your service. You increase your client's results because they value your service and are invested. You attract the best clients who are the easiest to satisfy and actually cost less to fulfill, and who are most likely to actually receive and perceive the most relative value. You multiply your margin because you have money to invest in systems to create efficiency, smart people, improve customer experience, scale your business, and most importantly of all, to keep watching the number in your personal bank account go up month after month, even with reinvesting in your business. This allows you to ultimately enjoy the process for the long haul and help more people grow rather than burning out and shriveling into obscurity. To swing the argument even further in favor of higher prices, here are a few interesting concepts. When you raise your price, you increase the value the consumer receives without changing anything else about your product. Wait, what? Yes. Higher price means higher value, literally. In a blind taste test, researchers ask consumers to rate three wines: a low-priced wine, a medium-priced wine, and an expensive wine. Throughout the study, the participants rated the wines with the prices visible. They rated them, unsurprisingly, in order of their price, with the most expensive being the best, the second most expensive being the second best, and the third cheapest option being rated as a cheap wine. What the tasters didn't know is that the researchers gave them the exact same wine all three times. Yet, the tasters reported a wide discrepancy between the high-priced wine and the cheap wine. This has deep implications for the direct relationship between value and price. In essence, raising your prices can directly enhance the value you provide. What's more, the higher the price, the more allure your product or service has. People want to buy expensive things. They just need a reason. And the goal isn't to just be slightly above market price. The goal is to be so much higher that a consumer thinks to themselves, "This is so much more expensive. There must be something entirely different going on here." That is how you create a category of one.